Yes, he said, expecting Peterson. The voice from Virginia said,
We got a partial cargo manifest.
And?
And I'm going to spend the rest of my life paying off the favor. You know how hard it must have been to find an irrelevant piece of paper from 50 years ago?
They've got clerks, the same as we did. What else have they got to do?
They claim plenty.
Don't believe them. What's on the manifest?
40 tons of war surplus flown in from the old 8th Air Force bases in the United Kingdom, from the old World War II bomber fields in East Anglia. They closed a bunch down in the middle 50s. Runways weren't long enough anymore.
Does it specify what kind of surplus?
Yes and no. Generically, it says air crew requirements, and specifically, there's a manufacturer's name that no one remembers, and a code that no one understands anymore.
Not even the Lackland guys?
Not even them. This is ancient history we're dealing with here.
The way I remember my ancient history, we didn't bring World War II surplus back from Europe. We either junked it over there or sold it off over there, kept the money in the local currencies and used it for Fulbright scholarships. Two birds with one stone. We got rid of a lot of old crap and we spread peace and brotherhood and understanding all at the same time, through educational exchange.
Those were the days.
What was the code?
NO6BA03.
Means nothing to me.
Means nothing to anyone. Could be underwear or hats.
We wouldn't have flown 40 tons of underwear or hats all the way back from Europe. No sense in that. Cheaper just to give them away. Or burn them.
So maybe it was something we couldn't give away, or sell, or burn, for security reasons. Sidearms, maybe. I think World War II pilots carried them, in case they were shot down over enemy territory.
What was the manufacturer's name?
Some outfit called Crown Laboratories.
Say again.
Crown Laboratories?
Oh, shit.
What?
40 tons? They've got to be kidding me.
Reacher, what?
I gotta go. As soon as he saw the leading edge of Peterson's headlight beams on the street, he stepped out the door and crossed the porch and hustled down the driveway. The cold hit him like a hammer. Peterson's tires crunched and crackled over the frozen snow. The car pulled up and Reacher climbed in. The heater was blowing lukewarm air. Reacher kept his hat and gloves on. Peterson K turned and bounced across the ruts and headed back to the main drag, turned right and drove south, slower than he would in summer, faster than he would in traffic. There was nothing else on the road. Only 9 in the evening, but the whole state seemed closed up for the night. People were all huddled inside, and Peterson's car was the only thing moving across the landscape. They made the turn 10 miles later and drove on. Parallel with the highway. The cloud was thin and high, and there was plenty of moonlight. There was still ice on the wind, coming steadily at them out of the west. It crusted on the windshield, a thin, abrasive layer that the wipers couldn't shift, like diamond dust. Peterson put the heater on defrost and ducked his head to look through warmed circles that got smaller with every mile. They turned right again on the wandering County 2 lane. Now the wind was on their left-hand side, and the windshield cleared again. The old runway loomed up ahead, gray and massive in the night. It was still clear. They bumped up on it, and the tire chains ground and rattled. They drove 2 fast miles. Saw red taillights ahead. A parked car. Its taillights faced them, and beyond its dark, end-on bulk was a pool of white from its headlights. There was a swirl of exhaust from its pipes, pooling, eddying, drifting, then blowing away. Peterson slowed and put his lights on bright. The parked car was empty. It was a Ford Crown Victoria. No markings, either dark blue or black. Hard to say in the glare.
Chief Holland's car, Peterson said.
They parked alongside it and climbed out into the stunning cold, and found Holland himself at the first hut's door. Fur hat, zipped parka, thick gloves, heavy boots, moving stiff and clumsy in all the clothing, his breath clouding in front of him. Holland wasn't pleased to see them. He said, "What the hell are you doing here?" He sounded angry. Peterson said, "Reacher figured out where the key is." "I don't care who figured out what. You shouldn't have come. Neither one of you. It's completely irresponsible. Suppose the siren goes off."
"It won't."
"You think?" "It can't. Can it? The cells are locked and the head counts are done. You trust their procedures?"
"Of course."
"You're an idiot, Andrew. You need to stop drinking the damn Kool-Aid. That place is a complete mess, especially the county lockup, which is what we're interested in right now. If you think they do a proper head count every night, then I've got a beachfront lot to sell you. $50 an acre, about a mile from here."
"It's a brand new place. Brand new metal and concrete. Same old human beings working there."
"So what are you saying? The head count could be faulty?"
"I'm saying dollars to donuts, there was no head count at all. I'm saying at 5 to 8, they sound a horn and expect everyone to wander home, and then at 8, the cell doors lock up electronically."
"Even if that's true, there's no danger until morning."
"They do night patrols, son. 10 scheduled, 1 an hour. I'm guessing they skip 9 of them. But at some point, they walk around with flashlights, checking beds, doing what they were supposed to do at 8 o'clock.
"Are you serious?"
"Human nature, Andrew. Get used to it."
"Should we go back?"
Holland paused a beat. "No. We have to go back that way anyway. Worst case, Mr. Salter will be alone for 5 minutes, maybe 10. It's a gamble. We'll take it. But I wish you hadn't come in the first place."
Reacher asked, "Why are you here?"
Holland looked at him. "Because I figured out where the key is."
"Good work?"
"Not really. Anyone with a brain could figure it out on a night like this."
"Where is it?"
Peterson asked. It was inside the paraffin stove in the first hut, a fine hiding place with built-in, time-delayed access. Too hot to think about searching earlier, now cool to the touch, like Peterson's own banked wood stove. The voice from Virginia had said, "Burn the place down and sift the ashes. An Air Force key is probably made of the same stuff as warheads. It would survive. Easy." And the voice had been right. The key had survived. It was fine. It had been dropped on the burner core, and it had heated and cooled with no bad consequences. It was a large T-shaped device, about 3 inches across. Complex teeth, the dull glitter of rare and exotic metal. Titanium, maybe. From way back, when paranoia permitted no skeptical questions about cost.